Hey, this is Dave Lagana of NWA Power and the National Wrestling Alliance, and you're listening to the Solomonster Sounds Off.
Solomonster back with a special Sound Off Extra. I have with me now a very special guest back on the podcast for the second time. He is the Vice President of the NWA and Executive Producer, along with Billy Corgan, of the new NWA Power Show, which airs every Tuesday at 6.05 p.m. Eastern on the official NWA YouTube channel and Facebook page. David Lagana joins me, still in editing mode for episode two.
Oh, yeah. Just let's drop the new open in. You get the scoop. There's a whole new open. We've ribbed ourselves and are going to change it every week. So it's the last thing I do every week is recut the open to update with the talents that are in the show. So it's a fun little open every week.
Well, I mean, as long as we get to keep the same theme music, though, the open for the show, I love the theme song. You got to keep that and not change that.
So Benny Hill wouldn't work?
Benny Hill works with everything, but yeah, not as good as Donkin, though.
Yeah, we were going to put Benny Hill on the chase scene with Josephus and James Storm.
That would have worked.
But no. It's been because we were shooting two full weeks ago. I don't know if I don't think I've slept more than 3 hours in the last any one night in the last 3 weeks. But it's all for a good cause, right?
Well, I have to congratulate you. You and your team. You were the talk of the town last week and even into this week. Overwhelmingly positive response for the debut episode of NWA Power. I'm trying to get those extra R's in there just to impress you.
That's I appreciate it.
So the first episode I saw just passed half a million total views.
Yep.
And I am reminded of a Vice article that ran not long after the first podcast we did together, which was right after Billy bought the NWA. And the headline of the article was, "The NWA is worthless, so why did Billy Corgan just buy it?"
Yeah.
Did you get a lot of that sentiment after the purchase? And do you feel, after seeing how well the first show has done, that you opened a lot of eyes as far as the value that the NWA name still carries and can carry going forward?
I think the power of the brand, while tarnished heavily by a bunch of carnies who thought they were worth six figures. The NWA always has, and I think everybody is seeing it in the last 6 days or 7 days that Power's been on. There's this feeling everybody has, and it's the touch point of the entire business. And then the fact that every organization has in some form or fashion touched this brand, it has this power to it. And it's one of the reasons that Billy picked the name for the show, because it's this powerful force. No matter how many times you kick it, there's always the kick out on 2 3/4.
Yeah, and the NWA obviously has a lot of equity. It's been around for decades. People know the initials.
Yeah,
and there's always going to be some value in the name. It's just it's a different time. It means something different now than it would have, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Well, I think what's interesting about it is if Billy would have bought it 10 years ago or 15 years ago, let's say he bought it in 2004, early Google, not as much YouTube, no WWE network. Now anyone of any age can search anything at any time. And the National Wrestling Alliance, the NWA, those letters, you know, it just gets compounded with every bit of history and pictures. And it just moves a lot faster now, our culture. And as it gets more niched, you know, these people call it generational memories. And Billy deals with that a lot with the Pumpkins. And, you know, I talk to a lot of his Pumpkins fans when I go out and shoot for him at shows. And they talk about, oh, I first heard his song on this. And we carry these memories, these smells, these sounds, these visuals that we grew up with. Or even if we didn't grow up with it, we heard about it. And I think that's what we tried to hit. And this has always been the plan. And it's just the timing of it has been different. And we've just kind of rolled with the punches. But, you know, I think we knew we had something when we walked in the room. And that's why I was glad we documented it, because I think everybody's reaction was genuine. And nothing was staged in any of this as far as people's reactions, and Cornette and Billy and mine. It's been such a great process, because we worked really hard to get here in a way that we're the one wrestling organization that doesn't have a $1 billion company behind it. And you know, it's really been a unique approach for Billy and I, because after our end at TNA with our good friend, whatever her name was, and, you know, you know, it just led to us having to really decide what we want to do. And I think you and I spoke at some point in this process, because I remember I called to pick your brain because of your expertise in YouTube. And we really decided to lean on these platforms and to brand build without worrying about a television deal, because, you know, since I went to TNA and even just external, like the dream of a television deal is it's very good, but you have to be able to prove yourself in the market. And I think that's what we try to do with Power.
Were either of you at all concerned, you know, with the wealth of wrestling content that's not only out there right now, but even that same night? You know, we have the debut of AEW Dark on YouTube and coming off NXT moving to USA, AEW on TNT, SmackDown going to Fox, all of these things happening in the span, I think, of about a week. Were you worried that you might get lost in all the noise, or were you seeing signs going in that told a different story?
I think we challenged ourselves. We picked the date. You know, the original. So when I looked at GPB, they had two different sets of weeks to shoot. They had the dates that we shot, and then they had, I think it was this weekend. And, you know, Billy and I looked at both potentials, and I said, well, if we shoot on this day, on the first, I said, we can launch, and the day of the week changed three times, but we decided on Tuesday, just because we felt it was the right time. And to be able to turn the show as quickly as we did, it was all a conscious decision, and I think we pushed ourselves, and I think we knew the show was going to be almost a 180 from every other show, where every other show is wall-to-wall wrestling. There are flips, there are dives, there are moonsaults, there are Canadian destroyers, but nobody's talking. So we knew that this show would stand on its own two feet with real engaging characters speaking from the heart in a way that isn't being done anywhere. So we knew at least with the concept, but once Nick Aldis went out and cut that promo, we knew we had something. Now the 3 minutes before that happened were near disastrous, as the I'll give you the scoop with a Z, or scoops with a Z, that the original match jump started before they were supposed to. And thankfully we got it calmed down and we're like, well, this is off to a rolling start. And that was like the first thing. But, you know, once the adrenaline kicked in and once Nick just, I mean, you don't think Nick Aldis was motivated, you know, like he has, he's quietly done an amazing job for 2 years, and I'm so happy that he's getting the recognition now. But he's been this good for at least a year and 3 months. You know, it's not like he just got these skills and were just good. He's been really working hard with everybody here to get ready, and he knocked it out of the park. And then here comes Eli, and then here comes James Storm, and then here comes Tim Storm, and you know, we have a murderer's row of promo guys that really can emote in a way that does not feel scripted, because it's not.
Well, there was a quote from Billy on one of the, might have been the most recent 10 pounds of gold video, let talented people be talented.
Yep.
And one of the things that came through watching and listening to the promos on that first episode, they didn't sound like people trying to remember and recite their lines. It felt to me like they were able to go out there, you know, as it was, I'm sure, in the studio days 30 years ago, and just speak and react to the audience. How much of what we, I think I know the answer to this already, but how much of what we heard was a case of let talented people be talented, as opposed to here's what we want you to say, now go say it?
We've had a very collaborative process in all of this since the beginning, because I'm entering my 19th year of doing wrestling this year. And I've worked in every company and I've worked in every system, with bullet points, fully scripted rehearsals. And one of the things that we, you know, I think it was December 12th of 2017, you know, we called this the authentic era, because, you know, Tim Storm should not be a character that exists in a pro wrestling world nowadays. He's a school teacher. He's a legit school teacher that was the world's champion. Nobody would have done that story, but it was too good. If you spent time with Tim Storm, that's who he is. His promo was so perfect because it wasn't perfect. He quoted Eminem, got the quote wrong, but was so humble in doing it. You couldn't not even make fun of him, but you just want him to do well. And it's just, there's so much in all of these characters, like Eli Drake, somebody that I've known for 10 years and just been waiting for his chance. Billy and I had him right on the cusp in 2016 before the Wicked Owl did some stuff. And, you know, he is excited to be here and ready to go. James Storm, who admittedly Billy and I did not, and probably to this moment still don't get along with really well, but he is the best player available on the board, and boy, can he deliver. And we, you know, we may not agree on politics and positioning, but he is a talent. And that's when we start to let talented people be talented. There's a lot of decisions that are made about friends and buddies and spots. And there's nobody that's pushing each other. Everybody here pushes each other in a way that I think would surprise each other. And, you know, Billy and I talk 7 times a day. Nick and I talk 5 times a day. We're always working there. Like, we use one of those fancy internet like group chat things, not like a text chat. It's a little bit deeper, but you know, we're all communicating on there at different times about different stuff, including the episode that should have been finished 2 days ago. But when we finished it, I was like, I don't like the ending. I said, the ending doesn't do it for me. The ending of the first show is so strong. So we went back to the drawing board, shot some new stuff. And, you know, when the show ends now, it has the same sort of emotional resonance, or at least story points that hit in the first one. And the open and the ends and the approach, this is part Saturday Night Live and part drama and all about authentic pro wrestling.
I know Billy grew up a fan of Georgia Championship Wrestling. I think I heard you mention that in one of the videos. Mm-hmm. And, you know, programs that focus primarily on strong personalities above all else. That really, to me, shined through with the show that you guys put together. It was less about the in-ring action and more about the stories and the wrestlers communicating with the audience. Was that your, would you say that was your number one goal in putting this show together?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to care. And it's the thing that bothers me in movies. When you have weak characters with poor motivations, and you just when it's hazy to the audience, it's very clear to the audience who wants what and why. Now, there may be a lot of questions, and questions are good, but you have to answer them. There's a lot of uniqueness in what we're trying to do, and it's Billy calls it the hothouse effect. I call it sometimes a lab. You know, we find stuff. And you know, like the moment with Nick and Camille and Joe Galli, we decided to expand on that because it's almost cultural, where here was this moment that you know, Nick had this great match. Tim, it was very much a very even, but you don't see matches like that very often anymore, where, you know, here is the most whitest of white knights, Tim Storm, having an opportunity to do a low blow and potentially win the world title. And he was justified in it, in the fact that this is his last chance. And it was like moments like that. And then here you have the reporter asking a question that's off, just a little off center, and you get an athlete's real reaction. Like, these kind of things are really unique to explore because they happen in real life all the time. I mean, look at our president and look at the news cycle we live in now. So for us, this show was, I don't say genetically engineered, but engineered to be as creatively close to the way we live, and even in the content we put out. Like, you know, we were putting out these clips as they were airing because we knew that people were going to kind of be really taken aback because there aren't anyone emoting these type of emotions on television. It's either really super fake and it's like hyper real reality where you go, well, that's just, I mean, that guy would have went to jail, you know, like that guy should go to jail for that, and he doesn't, and you just go, well, I know it's bullshit. So you know, for us, it was finding that real center. And there are parts in this show where you're watching going, I'm not really sure what's happening. And like in a good way, like the Camille and Nick story, you're wondering what's really going on. You know, why is she not talking? You know, it's not like, you know, we've seen her talk. You know, she spoke at Crockett Cup. You know, they had a verbal argument in the Marty Scurll match. So it's really this sort of layered thing that I think over time will really allow talents to build these stories and really help us to tell unique stories.
Nick Aldis, Eddie Kingston, Tim Storm, you just talked about some of the standouts on the mic last week. For me, I mean, me personally, Eddie Kingston coming out, getting in Latimer and Isaac's face was one of the highlights of the show. I'm curious what kind of reaction you got from those guys, the vets like Eddie Kingston and Homicide, after working in that type of setting, I assume, for the first time. and seeing the kind of reaction last week that the show received, if you've heard from any of them or even backstage that night, what kind of feedback did you get from them?
You know, everybody that's on this show, it's funny because I've been inundated with talent offers, you know, people that want to work here for literally since day one. And I always ask, they send me their highlight reel with all their big moves. I said, great, send me your best ticket selling promo and let me know the house. And I very rarely get promos back. But Eddie Kingston is somebody that I've worshipped his talents for 10 years. You know, I first worked with him in Ring of Honor in 2009. You know, he was on the HDNet show. And I remember just one day we had some downtime and I sat down with him while we were just literally waiting. I told the camera guy to start rolling. We did a sit down interview and he just emoted his real story and just like somebody that can talk like that. You know, he was one of the first calls we had. I was like, listen, I said, I don't know what we want you to do. I said, is D available? I said, let's just come. I said, just trust us. And he said, just give me the microphone. I said, no problem. And, you know, for him to walk out and just to hang and really emote. And then there's even one that I just tweeted, but it was like, it was on YouTube. Like there's a backstage one and, you know, the real is real and you can't script real. And just told him to be real. You know, he knows certain points that need to be hit, but man, just go out there and speak the truth. And a lot of these guys, they just want their chance. And I think that's the competitive advantage we offer as far as this show. If you didn't know who Eddie Kingston was, he walked out and in 2 minutes, you instantly were captivated on who he was. You didn't even need to know who he was. He let you know in his energy what he was about. And I think that's the key to the show. And Eddie Kingston's that. I mean, when you guys see this week's show, it's Ricky Starks, who I don't think most people have ever seen. You know, we've done a little bit with him, but his promo on the show, amazing. Trevor Murdoch, out of nowhere, literally saw him at Harley Race's funeral, and it was the day that we announced the show, and he's just like, you know, I wish there was something. I said, just come to Atlanta, because what am I going to do? I said, I don't know. I said, just come. We'll figure it out. And that guy is so talented. And still has so much to give. And Ken Anderson and Colt Cabana, and then our women and Allison Kay, and you see her and Ashley Vox, and we have a whole group of women coming forward, including Melina. You know, we're not hiding that she's on the show. It's just when she'll show up that I think people will be interested. And I think that everybody on this show, Billy or I, have a relationship with over 15 years, and it's we all have this same want to just show what this version of pro wrestling can feel like. I don't want to say look like, feel like. And I think that's really the power. And it kind of blew our doors off. You know, I thought it was going to be good. I thought, okay, we get to 100,000 views. That'd be really good. And when we were at 100,000 views by midnight that night, and we woke up to 200,000 views, and it really shows the power of YouTube. And you've been on YouTube for a very long time, and you know how powerful it can be.
Oh, yeah.
if you do it right. And 90% of wrestling promotions don't do it right. And they just see it as this weird ancillary place to throw footage up. I've heard of executives saying, no, we shouldn't do that because it'll hurt tune-in. Okay, keep doing that. I'm happy to use it. And the fact that we've found a way to engage an audience worldwide. Yes, we know you'd be better off on television, but to reach an audience and to show scale and honestly to have data and you know your audience's size, the fact that I'm able to go in and say to a potential partner, 84% of our audience is 18 to 44 males. Like that is a powerful stat. When you hear that wrestling is 50 plus on television, because that's the platform. Old people watch TV. You find me a 14-year-old who watches TV, and I'll tell you they've done that movie Vice Versa, and they're an old person in a young person's body. You know, no child is turning and flipping, and that was how the Monday Night Wars were fueled. But in reality, we live in a meme culture, and where people share 6 seconds at a time, and a dog in a Grinch costume. I just watched for a minute. I'm not sure why, but it captivated me for a minute. And those are the kind of things that grab people's attention. And once you have it, you better make sure it's worth it.
The studio. I want to talk just a little bit about that. It's almost like this own living, breathing organism. In a lot of ways, it's part of the identity of the show. And I know you scouted almost, I think, a dozen different locations before settling on the studio there in Atlanta. How long of a process was it from start to finish once you made the decision, okay, we found our home, to convert that studio into what we saw on screen last week.
So it's funny, this studio has been sort of dangled in front of us for 2 years. We had talked about, almost at launch, doing an Atlanta-based TV show. And our biggest fear was that counter in the corner of 300 people watching, you know, and we were like that. We didn't want to feel that. We wanted to see, can we create in a different way? So this finding GPB, you know, a man by the name of Lou Seals and Dave Marquez, they knew this existed, and it's a great facility. It's literally 300 yards from the mansion where they did the 605 show, from the parking garage. I did a really bad video the day after the show. And it was like, it's right from the garage up top. You can see the mansion from the backside. I slipped a shot of the mansion from the street into the open, just to kind of as a homage to history. So just even if the space didn't work physically, the location was great. But once we got in there and I did a site survey without Billy, and then when Billy was playing in Atlanta, I went down and we looked it together. And you know, originally we weren't going to use the seats. We were going to do the very traditional version of the show with seats on the floor. And then he looked at it with the seats pulled out, and he goes, "We have to." I said, "I don't know if the ring will fit." He goes, "It'll fit." And that Saturday when the ring went in, I was just like, "Oh boy, it's not going to fit. It's just going to be too big, and it's just going to be." But it was perfect. And you know, once it was in and once the flag started to go up, and this was even before the set went in, I was just like, I guess it's going to work. And the next morning I came in and the set was up. I mean, that set's massive. And it was the priciest piece of talent on the show. I mean, it was comparable to what a set of its size would cost. But I mean, it was, you know, the woman Paula who did it is an Emmy Award winning set designer. You know, she did it in a week. You know, we feel really good about all the work she did. It's beautiful, actually. Like it's so striking. And I think people's reactions when they saw the pictures, you know, a lot of the decisions were done for people's reactions when they saw stuff. So like we announced the name of the show and how you watch it 8 days before. In traditional thinking, you would think, no, you have to have 6 months and you have to have marketing plans and commercials cut. Just the name alone with the R's, everyone was like, what is this? What power with three R's? And then that same night, there was the first set of pictures came out. Because I refuse to let talent put the pictures out. I said, I want this to come from fans because I want them to lead the way of their excitement. And I think that is the thing that I think really stuck out that first night. Where that went from there was really good. And then just sort of the word of mouth. But the fact that we didn't release any footage before Tuesday at 6:05 last week was, again, a concerted decision to let people be completely surprised. I didn't let anybody see it. The only people who saw it were Billy Corgan and Nick Aldis. And I made Nick come over here. I was not sending it over anything that was unsecure on the internet. Like, I have a private FTP that Billy uses for stuff that I send him that nobody can see. So it's been really fun to see people's reactions.
Now, you shot 9 shows over a 2-day period, and there's a lot of names we have yet to see. You mentioned some of them before, you know, yep. Ken Anderson, Colt Cabana, the former Damian Sandow, Aaron Stevens, Rock and Roll Express, we know are going to be on the show. And that's to say nothing of the talent that we don't yet know. Was there anyone in particular who stood out to you in a way maybe that even you didn't expect that we should be keeping an eye out for in the coming weeks?
I think, you know, it's... You know, Billy and I had Sandow, Aaron Stevens, I think he was Aaron Rex at TNA. I still don't know why we called him after a dog, but I have no idea. None of that was Gabor.
It's TNA. Or,
yeah, I mean, it's tremendous. Well, the best is there's a moment where one of the formats for some reason had Aaron Rex on it. So Dave Marquez had just read off the format. He was literally Ron Burgundy. He will literally read whatever's on the teleprompter. And, you know, Stevens marches off and asks him to reintroduce him. That is not my given name. Which I have to yet to decide if that will make TV or not. So, but he shocked the hell out of me with this because he hasn't done anything for 2 years and his TNA run was unremarkable. But for this to really work out and for him to really, I mean, I don't even want to tease it, but he takes something that the audience was very familiar with him and his performances and flips it on its ear in a way where I'll just say there's a role reversal that people will be very familiar with that got him very over a long time ago. And it all happened very organically. It was not anything we planned. When I say we don't know what's going to happen sometimes, literally there's a situation where the audience reacted one way to a situation and the talents had to go on the fly and switch and just go with it. And it's really one of the more shocking things that happened to taping in a way that, you know, it seems like most times when the audience takes the story one way, they literally try and force them to go the other way to the point where they'll just kill it dead. I'm not talking about Rusev, but the way that he does this is great. And you know, I'm so proud of him. And I remember just talking to him after. I'm just like, where's this guy been? Like, where has he been? And he said, I just need the opportunity. And I think that's the thing that really gets Billy and I, and it makes us really happy and makes all this work worth it. And Billy to self-finance this. I mean, I there are terms thrown around for people that use their money in wrestling, but Billy loves it. And I think the guys see it because how passionate he is to let them succeed. And I think the audience sees it. I think that's why this is resonating. It's resonating for many reasons. And if people think it's just a nostalgia thing, then they didn't watch the show. Because the show, I dare you go watch one of those old 605 shows on the network, and 70% of it's putrid. Jim Valley talked about that on a podcast. He goes, go watch some of those shows. They don't move like this show. And the pace is 100% on me to keep that show moving. I'm cutting this for a 15-year-old who's watching on their iPhone. And I don't want them to ever be bored. And because I think it's easy to be bored nowadays. You got to keep them engaged.
What's your attitude on partnerships or working relationships with other promotions, you know, whereby their talent might appear in studio? I mean, do you have any maybe that we're not aware of that are ongoing, or have you had any kind of discussions, you know, even with like an AEW or a Ring of Honor, or maybe even something on a smaller level, as far as forming some kind of a working type relationship?
Well, I think when we left Ring of Honor, and you know, we didn't want to make a giant deal out of it. You know, at the time, it's like when you sleep over at somebody's house for too long, and somebody just goes, "Okay, what's happening?" You know, like, so Billy and I knew, and the reason we waited until this period, Billy was on tour this summer, so there was going to be no studio show in the summer. So, you know, we had Crockett Cup, and we were kind of in this weird limbo, you know, of timing. So we have great respect for Joe and Greg at Ring of Honor, and they've been nothing but supportive. It was just getting to the point where our talent was becoming normalized in their world, and it just didn't feel right to either side. And we just said, you know what, maybe let us reset. Let us come back together when it makes sense. And, you know, we have great relationships with them. You know, it's no secret that we've talked to WWE multiple times, because they've talked to everybody about partnering to do content on the network. Not sure where that will go. We're not waiting around for anybody is the point that we want to move forward. And again, and when it comes to television partners in television, especially, it's such a weird world now anyway, with streaming, so much money's being thrown around at creators and such, but Billy and I had not done a show on our own. And so for us, for our first show to come out of the gate this strong, we put a lot of work into it, but I think we wanted to show the market that not only could we deliver a quality show, and then there would be an audience for it, which, you know, I don't think any of us could have predicted. So anybody that wants to appear on this show, we're open for business. You know, and my phone rings all the time with people. It's just really what I think, whatever anybody wants to do. But I don't know how you're not a talent in this business and don't want to come on that podium and cut a promo. I don't know how, like, then you just don't want to talk, because the intimate interaction between the talent and the audience, and there's nothing like it anywhere in pro wrestling, because when you watch in-ring promos in pro wrestling, they're ignoring upwards of 70 to 90% of the audience that's in there, because they're not facing them, and you can't have conversation with people. It's hard to connect with somebody if you're not face to face with them. It's why so much more business gets done face to face, because you can look somebody in the eye and know if they're serious or not. And that's what's really happening in the studio, where when that podium sits, it faces the audience. So when they speak, and the audience was told, interact. If they say something you like, let them know. If they say something they don't like, let them know. Billy and I were talking about today. I'm waiting for a moment where somebody heckles somebody and the talent literally walks up to them. What would happen then? You know, it's really a unique environment that that anything can happen. Anyone can come out of that curtain, down those stairs at any time. And I think that is the magic of that room, is that's really hard to create now, especially because especially as a lot of content goes behind these paywalls, and you know, all the Disney content is now siloed over there, and now all of the this is on this service and on HBO Max. Audiences are just, I believe audiences will end up pushing to YouTube because or they'll pick and choose, and then it's up to attention. But for us, we're willing to work with anybody, and that includes TV partners, streaming partners, and we want to prove numbers that we can build an audience with our uniqueness. But I told Billy and I told Nick, I said, I want some version of this show forever to live on YouTube free, because it has to, because it's got us here. YouTube got us here. And, you know, all of our social platforms, we don't want to just tuck this thing behind a paywall, because it's not fair to the guys. And I think the audience wants something different. I did it with podcasting in 2011. In 2011, all of the really good podcasts, I'd say 95% of them, except for Colt Cabana, was behind a paywall. And when I did my podcast that only did for 9 months, and I still hear about it almost weekly, it was the first one that really did sort of in-depth interviews with talents that weren't behind a paywall. And I think the walls will come down, and we're not far off from this model actually working. Is it sustainable in this moment? No. And Billy said that comment before the show aired. And now, looking at what's possible, the more we stay independent, the more great deals we can make with promotions and other networks.
Well, let me ask you this. On the subject of Billy, you know, self-financing the project, you know, I know in the past, obviously he had a history with Impact, and there were constantly reports coming out of him pumping more money and resources into the company, and then there was obviously that messy split. My question is, it felt to me like he never was fully, clearly he was never fully given the opportunity to implement whatever vision it was that he had for that show, and I'm sure that must have been frustrating for him. Now, this is going back 3 years at this point. Was the vision, and maybe you don't know the answer to this, but was the vision that he had or would have had for Impact back then, had he been given that power, are we seeing a version of that here with this NWA show? I mean, would we have seen, not in studio, but would we have seen some form of what we are seeing now all those years ago, had he been given the opportunity when he was still working with Impact?
Yeah, I mean, this was all part of the plan, you know, from before, because we knew the company was insolvent. The company was 100% insolvent, and that's what the whole lawsuit was about. And somebody lied in court about it, and it just came down to a point of, let's just settle the lawsuit and move on, because if we end up with it, then we have all this debt. I said, do we want to deal with all this debt? I said, do we really want to be digging? Because then what ended up happening, the person who lied, she who shall not be named, ended up having to basically, she ended up with nothing. I don't even know what happened. But Anthem had to basically bail them out. And Anthem's done a really good job at least making it exist still. It's like this weird zombie thing that keeps going on. But, you know, they at least have their hands around it. But for us, we were going to shrink it down. Like Billy was never given costs. He was always sort of like kept at a distance. And I'm like, aren't you paying all their salaries? He goes, yeah, I guess I could fire them if I wanted to. And he had to threaten a couple times just even to get a travel budget or see what things cost. And my goal is to keep this as bare bones as possible. I shoot and edit all of 10 Pounds of Gold minus, I think, five of the 59 I've shot or edited. This show I'm editing. We could hire an editor, but all the costs we want to go to where it needs to go, because with institutional control, and Billy never had institutional control at Impact. And I've had a real education of having what every decision that goes into a wrestling show, from insurance to EMTs on site to ring load ins. Okay, we need five more guys next time to cut the load down so we don't have to keep this person here as long. There's a lot of decisions that go in, and they're all money based. And when it's somebody else's dollar, you know, I take Billy's money very seriously, and because I wanted this to work, and it has to work, because if it doesn't work, then we've done all this for nothing. And I think the audience feels that, and all the talents want it to work. Nobody's here just collecting a big paycheck and just getting fat because they're already getting paid. Everybody here is motivated because this is their spot. And that's what Billy wanted to give them. And that's what we wanted to do with Impact. And it was real hard. And, you know, it's funny, anytime I look up my name on Twitter, your tweet about me leaving a few people off my goodbye letter always comes up. And it was a very hard decision for me to walk away. I walked away. It wasn't like Billy said, I'll take care of you, I'll pay you. I didn't get a full-time salary till June of 2017. And I had to hustle to get other work and really make it work. And Billy and I just, we decided, let's just figure this out. And when the idea of the NWA came up, and it just felt right. And so, you know, for him to execute what he wants, he's always wanted to create in this world and show what he can do. Because, you know, everyone just sees, oh, he's just the singer of this thing. And he's actually a brand builder. And the legacy of the Pumpkins is 98% him. You know, he's the one that carries it forward, does the work. He's in studio from 10 a.m. until 7 p.m. every night working on new Pumpkin stuff or new music. Dude works harder than anybody else. And I think that's what's really come through with this. And he literally sang on the Sunday of these shows and then flew down. And then that's where you see where he gets in the car and we're going to the studio. He worked for 9 hours, then flew, spent 2 hours at the studio, went to bed, got up at 8 a.m. to do the press conference, and never complains once because he loves this. And it's not a money thing. This is, you know, we hope the brand grows, but we want to create a place that is, it's a fun place to play. I told Sean Waltman last night. And I think talents understand that because a lot of times they don't get to play. And again, yes, we are not offering the most money of any company, probably bottom third, but we offer an opportunity and you've seen how these talents have taken it.
You've said you and Billy have a 20-year plan for the NWA. Big picture, what does that plan look like?
It's reestablishing what people knew the brand to be in a new way. So, for example, I can't tell you what 15 through 20 is because of the technologies that will exist, you know. But for us, it's creating a brand that is very familiar to those who knew it and very comfortable for those who discover it. I think that kind of came through with how people watched the show this past week. All the core values of why people like wrestling is in everything that we do. And it's all about emotion and why we liked it. You have to go back to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old you. And I always ask people that. What was the first match you saw? Who was the first guy that you loved or hated? And I always ask them why. And it's so unique. That's that part of the feedback. Like it's like this weird time warp. But then it's almost like attached to their current life and what they're looking for currently. And that's where I think it worked. And it's the thing we're most proud of because it was engineered to be that way, but I don't think we knew the impact it would really have.
Episode 2 has yet to air. It drops later today when this interview drops. Any sneak peek as to what we can expect? I know these shows are building to an NWA pay-per-view. Yep. Might we get some more information on that tonight?
Yes, you'll find out. It's the next thing I have to cut after we hang out is the announcement of the pay-per-view name, which will be December 14th, Saturday, 6:05. I mean, if we're going to run on Saturday, you got to run 6:05, right? On December 14th, back at GPB, we'll be there for 3 nights. These shows are, it's funny because Cornette was like, we didn't promote any pay-per-view matches. I said, Jim, I know how to promote pay-per-view. Like I said, it'll be in a very 10 pounds of gold way. And because ultimately the 8 or 9 weeks end, I think 2 or 3 weeks before December 14th. So we're taking a very seasonal aspect to this where the climax of the stories will be on pay-per-view and you'll have a little time to let it sit, but there will still be content leading up to it as well. It's just the weekly television show sometimes will be off for a week or two because that's what we're allowed to do. That's the great part of YouTube. You decide when you publish. Now, the 6:05 time is the destination, but it's not the only time you have to watch. And the fact that the live viewing number was 32,000 people watched it live on YouTube. It was 16 concurrent, but 32,000 different people tuned in. Over the in the 6 or 7 days since, 370,000 people found it. And what's really unique about the platform for that, and you know this as well, I'm not preaching to the choir, but people discovered the show in variants of different ways. AEW Dark sent somewhere between 22 and 37% of the audience. Anyone who watched AEW Dark was suggested, and they clicked through and they watched it. And that's like watch time. Like that's 22 to 37% of the watch time came from AEW Dark. So I don't know if those fans had never seen it or were aware of it, but they checked it out. And some came from search, word of mouth, tweets. And I think that's the really fun part of this show is that people are discovering it, and it's good. You know, it's a good show. I hate to judge it myself, but I think I'll let people's opinions stand on it. But for me, that's been the most interesting part of this. And tomorrow is a whole different type of show, meaning, you know, this past week had a, you know, world title match, but you're going to get to meet a lot more characters, and we're going to carry forward the Nick and Camille story with Joe Galli continues. And by the way, none of it aired to the house. So it's new, it's spoiler free. And in being able to explore and play in the story that way is, it's fun. So at episode two, I was, when we decided to rework it, and now it feels like a really good, you know, it feels like it fits everything else. I mean, the promos are all good, the action's all good, but sometimes it's the order you put things in.
Well, as David mentioned, the NWA returns to Atlanta for its second set of tapings December 14th through the 16th. Tickets go on sale this Friday, October 18th. I hope to be able to attend a show in that studio one day. You know, Lucha Underground was one of my favorite shows during the period that it was on the air. And I was very sad to see it fizzle out the way it did. But one of my big regrets was never attending a show in their temple, as they called it.
Yeah.
So one day I want to make my way to an NWA taping to get the full live experience.
I think that's the really, we did well, you know, like we had, I think our best night was 200, I think maybe just a little under 200. It seats 255. And I really hope, I think people will travel for it. I think, well, Saturday and Sunday will help. Monday will be a little bit, you know, more challenging to get people there, but this time it's a Saturday, Sunday. And I think it's a fun place to come. It's a beautiful facility. I looked at some real shitholes. Like, I'm like, I can't do this. I'm not having people change outside. I'm not having like, we can't do this. And when I walked in there, it's everything that we had at Universal at 1/5 the price. It's expensive, but it is far cheaper. I don't have to have a truck. Everything is built in. Those cameras are the same cameras I learned how to shoot television on, pedestal cameras back in the 90s in college. It's like a time warp for me. And it's a beautiful facility. Like you show up, it's a professional parking garage. There's a nice lobby. There's bathrooms that don't smell like death. You know, it's the people and the staff is great. You know, they went above and beyond, and you know, to have a place like that and really good partners that there only are so many people that have done pro wrestling, and they all either work at WWE or all the old TNA people now work at AEW. So these were a lot of Emmy award winning people that came in to work on this show, and to have expertise like that, and to not like our audio mixer had never mixed wrestling before, but he mixed talk shows before, and that's why I think the audience has a full sound to it. He mixed it like a talk show. And I think that's why it sounds different than most wrestling shows. And, you know, the camera work and all this stuff, we just told them, just see what's there. And we worked with them every day. So, like, you will have a good time. It reminds me of very early ECW Arena, just except people smell nicer.
Well, you can follow David on Twitter, at Lagana, and watch NWA Power each and every Tuesday at 6:05 p.m. Eastern on the NWA YouTube channel and Facebook page. Anything else you'd like to get out there and let people know about?
No, I send energy drinks. I'll be here for a while. So
sounds like you need it with the hours pulling lately.
It's all good. I don't know if my cat was playing with his toy behind us during some of it. Now he's sleeping. So
your cat has become something of a Twitter celebrity.
Of course. Well, people asked about. They asked if my cat was at the show. Like, no, Monkey did not come to the show. If you've ever had a cat, you would know how terrible of an idea that would be, except for Teddy Hart's cats, which I don't really want to discuss.
Well, this was awesome. Thank you, David. Appreciate all the information. And I will say this, there were a lot of people who did not know about the show. And again, I think part of it was that it was just lost in all the noise of everything that was going on at the beginning of the month. And I mentioned it last couple of weeks on my show. And I said, listen, you know, in addition to all this other stuff, on Tuesday on YouTube, there's the NWA premiere. You should check it out. And almost to a T, I've gotten nothing but positive comments from people saying, oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad you mentioned it. It's in my rotation now of things to watch for the week. And these are people who, In some cases, I hear from them, and they usually tell me there's too much in the way of wrestling, and they're looking to cut from their routine, and yet the NWA, it seems like they don't have much of an issue making room for it.
You always find time for stuff that you want to watch. You always find time for things that you enjoy. It's when you watch stuff that you don't enjoy, that's when I think it really hurts a viewer.
Well, David, thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you all for listening. You can grab the download link in the description down below. I'll also be pushing this out to the feed probably either tonight or tomorrow. Leave a comment down below. I will see you back here for more Sound Off Extra content later this week. Take care, guys.